coast's clear. Now to sneak under the tree and find out what presents I've got. Ah. Oh, to mother with regards from father. Happy sherry drinking in these. Wonder what it is. Oh, dear. Staggering snowmen. Someone's coming down the chimney. Could it be? No, surely not.
Postie, Harpoon magazine.
Yaroo, the bumper Christmas edition of my favourite weekly. Give it here, you sooty twit.
Eh?
Ooh, what a lovely Christmassy cover.
There she blows! Well to poor cotton.
Hold your fire, bosun. That poor creature don't deserve such a fate at this holy time of year.
No, cotton?
No, it's Christmas after all. Tie a sprig of festive bells to the harpoon, and then let him have it. Ho, 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 ho.
Season's greetings to you, you blubbery beast.
Aboard for this week's bumper Christmas edition of The Harpoon, a magazine for young and old across the English-speaking world, with snow-capped title page and numerous festive illustrations. Price 1 shilling net and available throughout the empire. All rights reserved.
You brute! And a very Merry Christmas to everyone in the Empire. And only the Empire. Ha 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 ha! Ah, this is your old chum, the editor, arriving at Harpoon House in a sleigh towed by Bertie, the Harpoon hobby horse. Well, have we got a crammed cracker of festive facts and fun for you this week. Captain Bonnet is back, of course. We've a tale of feathered fortitude in Old Gobbler, the turkey who tried, the man with the biggest Yule log in Merioneth, and a small picture of a figgy pudding for our poorer readers to drool over. Enjoy it, won't ya? I'm off on me sleigh to call in on some rich people in this season of goodwill to all men. Which doesn't apply to you, of course, you ugly bag of bones. Oh, and don't forget, look out for your free silver sixpence buried somewhere in the azure. Doodle, Pip!
There, there. Just look at Jemima. Doesn't she seem real? With her pink cheeks, her moving arms and legs, her eyelashes and her real tears. And when you pick her up, she stops crying. Yes, Jemima is the very latest in doll design. A little friend every girl will want this Christmas. She's so real-looking, you'll be amazed. Send 1 guinea now while stocks last for your Jemima doll to Mablethorpe's Dolls Limited, The Orphanage, Matlock. You'll think you've got a real baby for Christmas.
Send under plain cover with the string tied very tight. Shut up!
Christmas Customs Around the World.
By Clapham Rustable, author of Great Sherbets of the Industrial Revolution. Illustrations at foot of page.
Greetings. In Britain, on Christmas Eve, children leave Santa Claus mince pies and a glass of sherry and hang a stocking from their bedsteads. Santa comes down the chimney, consumes his provisions and fills the stockings with presents and some nuts. But what about in other countries? Well, in France, boys and girls link arms and dance in a big circle around the tree, gaily decorated with cloves of garlic, poodles, and items of ladies' lingerie. Then, les enfants rush to their beds, and a character known as Monsieur Oignon emerges from the cellar. He puts on the ladies' underwear, eats the poodles, and leaves each child an oignon before returning to the cellar for another year. In Germany, their mythical figure, der Beardführer, enters not via the chimney or the cellar, but by kicking down the front door just before daybreak. Also, instead of leaving him a glass of milk, children attempt to hang its contents from the tree. Finally, in the Christmas Islands, the attitude to Yuletide can be neatly summed up in the words of this, their only carol. We sit on the beach. We wear grass skirts. We swim in the warm azure waters beneath the baking sun. Hardly very Christmassy, is it? Whose bright idea was it to call this place the Christmas Islands? And who's this Jesus chappy, anyway?
Illustrations, plate one. Monsieur Oignon eating a festive poodle, plate two.
Wunderbar!
A German child pouring milk on the Christmas tree, plate three. Christmas in the Christmas Islands. Finally, plate four, the British Christmas. Wait a minute. A mysterious red-coated figure eating a mince pie and sipping sherry. Good Lord, I thought he didn't exist.
From vermin to baubles. My kit, inclusive of cheese, mousetrap, paint, glue and glitter, will convert unwanted pests into cheap decorations that hang by their tails. Box 400.
And now, here is a special Christmas message from the Bishop of Zanzibar. The Bishop of Zanzibar.
Festive but fascinating. Yuletide wisdom with Uncle Nat.
Did you know that the true meaning of the words Boxing Day comes from the word box, meaning the first half of the word boxing, ing, meaning the second half of the word boxing, and day, meaning the second word in the phrase Boxing Day.
And next. My word. Who's that mysterious jolly chap on a sleigh at the top of the page? Lest we forget, a tale of death or dominoes.
The Western Front, December the 24th, 1915. Boche and Britain lie in mortal combat. But as Christmas morn casts its blushing hues across the crated battlefield, a new melody rises from the snowbound trenches and fills the frosty air. In a spirit of Christian brotherhood, Tommy and Fritz cast down their arms and launch into a bout of seasonal soccer in no man's land.
Here, Fritz, over here, on me edge.
Yeah, boy, Tommy.
Go down the wing, mate.
Among the craters they frolic, bright laughter replacing the sullen fury of the guns. But as the day wanes and the dusk-spilled blood of the sunset is shed across the snowy landscape, the laughter dies away, and only a tangle of footprints remain like stitches across the white snow.
Regiment! Resume! What?
But wait. In a small dugout on the edge of the battlefield, a humble, war-weary sapper has an idea.
Sergeant?
Yes, Private?
Well, we quite enjoyed that little game of football with Harry Hunter, and we was wondering, like, because it's still Boxing Day, we could sort of have a game of rugby or something with them. I mean, after all, it is still a special day, sir, isn't it, sir?
It's still a special day, sir.
Message for the enemy! A regiment suggesting special Boxing Day game of rugby.
And so the spirit of goodwill extended into Boxing Day. But when night fell...
Sergeant, Christmas has 12 days, doesn't it, sir?
What are you getting at, Private Wilmot?
Me and the lads were thinking, sir, that a spot of rounders with Teddy Teuton might be conducive to our all-round well-being, sir. And after all, it is still a special day, sir, isn't it, sir? Isn't it?
Special day, sir.
Oh, very well.
Game of rounders, Fritz!
Yeah.
New Year's Day found the rival regiments embroiled in a pleasant game of tennis. St. Swithin's Day found them hunched over chessboards.
King's pawn to bishop's rook.
Check.
Then came February.
Sergeant?
Don't tell me. It's the Egyptian Festival of the Sun.
Special day, sir.
Sports?
Marbles, sir.
March.
Ramadan, sir. Granny's footsteps.
April?
It's the anniversary, sir, of Private Wilkins' decision to build an extension to his garage.
Yes.
He didn't actually go ahead with the extension, but we thought it was a pretty special day anyway. I mean, after all, a garage is a garage, and...
Sports.
Seeing who can do the best impression of a robin, sir.
But come December...
It's the anniversary of my shoelace snapping and me being very annoyed about it, sir.
Special day. You'll have to do better than that, Private. I'm beginning to suspect something. Regiment, resume!
What? No, but wait, sir, you can't do that.
No, you can't do that.
Why not?
Well, it's Christmas again, sir. Get the fives out, lads.
And so the regiment resumed their insatiable orgy of sport and recreation. And many years later, the two armies could still be seen flinging ping-pong balls at each other or indulging in leisurely afternoon games of word association. Merry Christmas.
A free silver sixpence. A free silver sixpence.
Ooh, where's it gone?
Utilize your goose with Nurse Dennis, continuing her alphabet of universal knowledge from Ararat to Z. This week, the letter Turkey, with help from Little Bobby.
Hello, materials, and a happy Hogmanay to you all. Well, the commonest sight after a tasty Christmas dinner is, of course, the leftover turkey. Well, have no fear, Madeiros. Here are some ways of turning your leftover fowl into a thing of beauty, pleasure, entertainment, and architectural significance. Number one.
A footstool.
Aye, a footstool. All you need is a large piece of velvet. Simply cover the rotting carcass with the velvet and rest your feet on top of it, sure in the knowledge that you've outwitted all those evil footstool manufacturers who've been after your money for years. Number two.
A house.
Aye, a house. Simply drill a few holes in the turkey to make some doors and windows. Hang a few small curtains from the bones, and hey-ho, you've an ideal holiday cottage or granny flat. Ideal, that is, if your granny happens to be 3 inches tall, but who's measuring? Number three.
A three-kind...
Cylindered.
A three-kinded Packard motor car with automatic gears and front-wheel drive.
Aye. And how can you possibly make this out of a leftover turkey, I hear you cry? Cheerio, Madeiros!
Comic Corner. Street urchin to top-hatted man bearing lots of Christmas gifts and running through Covent Garden.
Here, mate, spare us one of those presents. It's Christmas and all.
Top-hatted man bearing lots of Christmas gifts and running through Covent Garden to street urchin.
No.
Very funny.
True Life Tales.
Old Gobbler, the turkey who tried.
Being a story of one roasting fowl's selfless endeavors. By Carlton Carthage, author of Fearless Madge, Rat Without Equal.
It was a dark, chilly 24th of December, 1650, in the tiny village of Swaffham, Norfolk. An icy breeze drifted o'er fields thick with snow. Lowly peasants, resplendent in straw waistcoats and holly-covered jerkins, gathered in a freezing barn, generously rented out to them by the landowner. They put out a long wooden table while excitedly swapping merry fables of berry-picking,
and the Black Death. Meanwhile, in the barn next door... ...500 turkeys, or turkeys as they were then known, lay sleeping in a large cot of hay, their dreams and thoughts also filled with excitement. For tomorrow was always a joyous day for man and bird alike, the commencement of the Feast of Jerkin Yule. Humans and turkeys would gather each year for the Feast of Jerkin Yule. Together they would dance and laugh and eat corn and barley till the sun went down.
Merry Jerkin Yule and peace to all fowl!
But for now, men made ready, whilst turkeys slept. All except for one. The oldest and wisest of the turkeys, a wrinkled fellow known by all as Old Gobbler, sat pondering. Tonight was Gobbler's 80th Christmas, and as he squatted amongst his companions, he thought back o'er years gone by of laughter and tears and feathered friends deceased. He looked at the moon through a hole in the roof and mused whether there might be other turkeys up there. Suddenly, a faint glow on the other side of the barn came to Gobbler's attention. He gazed across the barn in horror. Fire! Some foolish turkey has left a lamp burning beside a haystack, and a hot cinder has landed and ignited the hay. In an instant, without thought for himself, Gobbler is sprinting across the barn, leaping over his dozer trunks towards the flames. But the fire has caught. Gobbler throws a singed wing up to shield his beak from the searing heat. He blows hard on the fire, but it's useless. And then, in a corner, he spots a lute left ready for the jubilation of the morrow. Gobbler picks up the lute, flings wide the barn doors, and begins to play. One by one, the others stir, at first bemused. Why is Old Gobbler playing a lute? But then they spot the fire, and the turkeys understand. They rise as one, as Gobbler leads them, Pied Piper fashion, out of the blazing barn. People begin to emerge from the adjacent barn. What's afoot? Fire! Fire! But Gobbler rushes back in. No, Gobbler, no, cry the others. But it is too late. Our hero is in the midst of the fiery hell, attempting to douse the flames with a large sack of sage and onion stuffing, normally used as cattle feed. Oh. Eventually, the fire died down. Turkeys and peasants gathered anxiously at the barn door. A landowner arrived and pushed his way through the throng and into the barn. Soon, he emerged, cradling a small, sizzling, blackened corpse, still clutching a clawful of stuffing. The landowner looked down through tear-filled eyes and sniffed, and sniffed, and sniffed. And a smell so rich and flavoursome, the smell we know today as that of roast turkey and stuffing, filled his and everyone's nostrils. And the folk looked down at the turkeys, and the turkeys looked up at the folk, and the folk looked back at the turkeys. And the rest, of course, is history. So, reader, when you tuck into your turkey this Christmas and nibble the delicious, crunchy stuffing within, pause and think on a time when a fowl gave us both his all and the idea for Christmas dinner. Festive but fascinating. Yuletide wisdom with Uncle Nat.
Hello there. Have you ever wondered what life was like before Christmas was invented? Well, let's take a look at Uncle Nat's magic fishbowl and find out, shall we? Look. A British family in 100 BC decorating their mud hut with paper chains, baubles, and little string bags of chocolate coins.
Darling, yes? Why are we decorating our hut like this and giving each other prezzies?
I haven't the foggiest, dear. Some strange impulse. Can't fathom it out. Mary?
Yes?
Nothing.
You were going to say Mary something, darling.
So I was. How terribly puzzling.
Buy yourself a number of thick jerseys this winter.
That was an announcement by His Majesty's Department of Thick Jerseys.
Harpoon Advent Adventure.
The Boy Who Saw St. Nicholas.
Being the concluding part in our thrilling tale of Crooks and Christmas Trees by Angela Poppinjay Kisso, authoress of The King and the Conch Shell, and Thank God for Edwin Chadwick.
Young Master Topham de Winter III has spotted a suspect Santa and Cockney acquaintance emerging from the chimney of his father's mansion, clutching a bulging coal sack. Meantime, Topham's father, devastated by the tragic death of his young wife, has flung 200 brandy glasses, the chaise longue, and finally himself into the fire. The bereaved Topham has run, anguished, to the slow-laden streets. Hours later, lost, parentless, and in his nightshirt, the little tobacco heir sees the Cockney robbers and their sack of loot, entering an orphanage. Topham ducked back into the shadows and sat miserably upon an icy step. What a perfectly awful start to Yuletide. Yet after the robbery, destruction, and his father's brutal self-cremation, one question burned in Topham's mind. What was in the bulging coal sack?
Goodness! Another Spurious St. Nicholas! And another! And another! And another! All going into the orphanage with bulging coal sacks.
The last white-bearded figure entered the grim dwelling and shut the door behind him. But
he hasn't shut the door properly. Now's my chance to find out once and for all just what booty these festive felons have purloined from my house. What a queer place. Where are the butlers and the chandeliers? And what's that? A strange little doggy scurrying down the stairs.
No dog this, but a rat. So much to learn, poor little orphaned magnate.
A club-footed urchin approaches. I'll dart beneath this stairwell.
The arthritic infant limped past Topham and into a room across the hallway. Topham tiptoed over and peered in.
All right. Calm yourselves.
But we can hardly wait, Mr. Chigwell. Little Billy Ricketts is near enough out of his wheelchair with excitement.
As the ecstatic orphans gathered around the bulging sacks, Topham gazed through his gold-framed monocle at their ragged clothes, their thin, drawn faces, their myriad broken, useless limbs.
So this is what poor people look like.
Right, midnight. Time to open these sacks and give out your gifts. Oh. One for you, Freddy No Dad.
Oh, it's just like I imagined.
Scruffy the Sid, one for you.
Blimmin' gorgeous. Thanks, sir. Merry Christmas.
Little backless Kate, there's yours.
Oh, I don't deserve such a thing. Such lovely, lovely coal.
Coal?
Yes, coal. The Cockneys, too honest to steal real treasures, yet too kind to see orphans freeze at Yuletide, had stolen solid fuel from the rich to heat up the poor. And so to each child they handed a single lump of anthracite.
Your attention, please. I live in one of the houses from which you have taken this coal. I entered this place to solve a crime of theft. But I realize there is a far greater crime which I myself have committed. The crime of greed. When I saw Cockney Santas on my roof, I thought I saw counterfeits. But in fact, I saw St. Nicholas. The real St. Nicholas.
You what?
He must be one of the new ones, sir.
Well, I ain't seen him before.
He's got a monocle. Is his eye crippled?
No, I don't think you understand. I don't belong here. I'm young Master Topham de Winter III.
A good one, son. And I suppose you ran all the way from your big mansion in that nightshirt, did you?
Yes.
Okay, then, Master Topham. Tell us where you live, and we'll go and fetch your parents.
No. But you can't. They're
what?
Dead. I want to go home now. I want to go home.
You are home, son.
Spare a copper for them as has no parents, governor. Spare a copper for an old orphan.
And so young Master Topham de Winter III, once heir to the greatest tobacco fortune in England, learnt the twin follies of greed and walking into an orphanage in just your nightshirt, freely admitting that both your parents are deceased. Ironically, Topham's father, in fact, survived his attempted suicide in the Inglenook with minor burns, the pain of which shocked him into the realization that he had merely dreamt the tragic death of Topham's mother, who was simply out shopping in Bloomsbury that supposedly awful night. Together they searched far and wide for their missing son, even placing an advertisement in the personal columns of the North Datchet Leader. But Topham, or little bubolic Barney, as he has now called himself, had meantime contracted dropsy and lost the use of his forehead. But even years later, penniless, tragically lost, and existing as a beggar next to Bethnal Green Pie and Mash Stall and Victorian Ear Scoop retailers, Topham knew somewhere in the barren chasms of his tortured mind that he had once been the boy who saw St. Nicholas.
Collingwood's Christmas crackers, guaranteed to go with a bang. Three price ranges to suit all pockets. Our budget box set for threepence, containing a small paper hat and a whistle. Our slightly larger economy set for a shilling, containing a bigger hat and a Chinese puzzle. And our luxury king-sized set for 3,000 guineas, containing a velvet top hat, a thatched cottage, and a secluded private beach with exclusive swimming rights.
Harpoon Back Pages.
Who's been polishing the sun, rubbing out the clouds of grey? They must have known just how I like it. Everything's coming my way.
Hey, Pip. Well, last of all this week is a special holly-bedecked hamper of hilarity, the Harpooners Club and Pantomime Word Mix. How many names of famous Christmas pantomimes can you make out of the following jumble of words?
Blumetcha has in bad thickness of out blip 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 if otok in the wood.
There you go. And if you get 60 or more, then you're an annoying clever clogs and probably very boring.
Well, that's all for this year from your old chum the editor. And all the columnists here at the offices of the Harpoon, especially Captain Bonnet. And a Merry Christmas to all our readers. Oh, by the way, if you were wondering who the mysterious red-coated figure was flitting through the magazine, yep, it was me, pinching everyone's Yuletide presents. Come on, Harpooners, let's have a farewell wassail. Hip, hip.
Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him. Christ the Lord.
The Harpoon magazine is printed and published weekly by the proprietors, London W1. The magazine was penned by Julian Dutton and Peter Bainham. The characters were lavishly depicted by Susie Brann, Alistair McGowan, Mary Elliott Nelson, Peter Bainham, and Julian Dutton. The Harpoon Christmas special was produced on finest Egyptian silk by Sarah Smith. All rights reserved.